Everything you know about health is about to change. Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Sometimes people suffer, not from lack of faith, but from lack of knowledge. This is the show that changes that. If you are tired of being sick, tired of not getting answers, tired of spinning in circles, then listen closely to the next 30 minutes. For healing is not a mystery. It is a miracle that you were designed to experience. It takes hard work and real knowledge. It takes patience and time. It takes the education this show can provide. So, get it straight today. Here's Dr. Medici.
Heat in the sense of why your body needs heat. But upon the hour, I got caught with a more interesting statement or idea. And it came off the shelf, the bookshelves this week. I recommend you go to your local magazine stand and get Scientific American's recent display. Scientific American, you can get it anywhere. You can get it online for this month. Top left-hand corner. Great article. Something that I'm going to really fly with today. The real paleo diet. What early humans actually ate. Now, this is of enormous significance to me. I think you're interested too. But what's of significance and what I'm pointing out more than anything is the fact that with all the debates about all the choices that all of us can make when we're dealing with health issues, comes anthropology, archaeology, ancient history, and the study of animals in nature, of which this article is about. And rather than get lost in today's current opinion as to what choices you should make in terms of your food, should you be vegetarian? Should you be vegan? Should you go paleo? You know, paleo doesn't have dairy. Then there are the ketogenic people, which are really big on dairy. And then there's all subsets of that, so on and so forth. And the debate rages on and on and on and on. Well, I like to make my opinions, not just through clinical experience, but from another standpoint. And that's these articles that surface every now and then that go into these little places in nature, in biology, in anthropology, in archaeology. I'll get more specific later, but that tell us in the most non-biased way what the truth is. I'm going to give you an example of this. This article, and I put the first page of this article, if you go to the website, I put it on picture number 7, the real paleo diet. For those of you just driving, get Scientific American. Open the article and look at the first page. It says the real paleo diet. If you're on the website, straighttalk.cc, this is picture number 7. And what I did on the next page is I showed you a picture of a monkey. I think it's a macaw monkey. And what this anthropologist, biologist is doing in this article is tearing up one of the great traditions in the natural health movement. That's why I put it up here. It's tearing up this idea that based on your teeth, the structure of your teeth, you can determine what you're supposed to eat. Now, this has been used for years. I'll give you an example. Michio Kushi, the macrobiotic diet, 32 teeth. We have 4 of those 32 are those sharp incisors. That's 1/8. Therefore, about 12% of your diet should be animal protein. Very commonly used observation and argument that really and truly meat should be at a minimum, a real minimum. and that the vegetarian diet is superior is evidenced and argued by so many people as a matter of the fact that human beings, Homo sapien, Neanderthal, all the little subsets in the last half million years, have way more molars. And because they have way more molars equipped for grinding, well, then obviously we ought to be going after fibrous foods. You know, tree bark, leaves. Certainly this was used to support the agrarian claim that if you look at a guy's mouth, his teeth tell you he ought to be eating a lot more grain than meat, and so on and so forth. You've heard these arguments. I've heard these arguments. Here's a guy studying multiple. Read the article. I posted just a page or two on the site. Read the article. Because it's talking about his experience over the decades studying different animal lines and noticing that in an animal's mouth, in this case, the monkey. You see, the monkey here is eating a piece of fruit. If you look into the monkey's mouth, its teeth are equipped to eat fibrous, hard to break down, hard to chew, hard to tear up sorts of plant vegetation. That's what its mouth will tell you. And yet, if you give this monkey a chance, at every opportunity, it'll skip all that and eat the fruit. Now, if you can really get that, if you can really understand this statement, it's massive. It's massive. And this doctor, this anthropologist, biologist, is contending that really, these specialized teeth are backup teeth. They're what's there that you're supposed to use in time of famine or when you can't get to the fruit. So it's basically saying, look, the monkey's got teeth that are equipped to grind up and chew this very fibrous, pithy food. But anytime it can, it'll skip all that, forget most of its teeth, and go after the fruit. Then it gets into how gorillas do the same thing, and other animals do the same thing. Fish will do the same thing. This biologist observes that throughout nature, you can't determine what an animal is supposed to eat based upon the wear patterns and shape of the teeth. Now that blows a massive hole in what we've used to justify this notion that mostly we're supposed to be vegetarian. I think it at least raises some very, very serious questions. Now, Cannibal and Kings, great book by a guy out of Columbia University named Marvin Harris. Famous book. Came out, I don't know, 30, 40 years ago, maybe more. Cannibals and Kings. It studies in the book, one of the places it studies is the country of India. India next to China. And points out that if you trace Indian history back far enough to where what Harris, the anthropologist, claims is a time when the ratio between forest and human population was balanced enough that people could eat meat, all those Hindus and people of India who swore off beef were eating it liberally. That eating meat was a common, predominant way of life if you traced Indian history back far enough. Again, someone goes to the anthropology. They're going to go to the archaeology. I'll talk about Jared Diamond in a moment. To start raising curious questions about what current arguments or modern day man uses to determine his interpretation of how one should eat. There we have. In India today, the people from India, generally the Hindus, not the Sikhs, but the Hindus do not eat beef. I believe the Sikhs do. I could be wrong. I apologize if I'm incorrect there, but your average Indian Hindu will not eat beef, nor will they eat, for the most part, any animal protein. There's exceptions, but the cow you don't touch. The cow is sacred. And Harrison, the book points out this was a lot of nonsense if you trace Indian culture back far enough. That's extremely interesting to me. The notion that the teeth should determine the food that you eat, that somehow your teeth tell you how you should really eat, as contradicted by many, many animal lines, monkey lines, is also very curious. And this is what I mean. We modern day men use these arguments. And if you trace it back far enough, if you look in interesting places, you see very, very sharp contradictions to the prevailing models. Now, here's one. Jared Diamond, the third chimpanzee. I haven't mentioned Jared Diamond, Pulitzer Prize winner for Guns, Germs, and Steel. He took his doctorate from UCLA, like in the 50s, in physiology. He couldn't care less what you eat. This book is another mind rocker. The Third Chimpanzee, Chapter 8. Get the book. Go to Chapter 8. Do these things yourself. Get Scientific American. Get Cannibals and Kings. Get The Third Chimpanzee. Chapter 8, The Third Chimpanzee, Jared Diamond. Agriculture's Mixed Blessings. It traces health based on DNA analysis, forensic analysis. That's something we couldn't do 20 years ago. We've got it down pretty darn good now. In other words, Diamond et al., they dig up corpses going back 5,000, 6,000, 7,000, 8,000, 10,000 years ago, all over the world, and finds that before we farmed, when we were hunter-gatherer, I'm not going to say paleo. Paleo's destroyed already. It means too many things to too many people, and it's one of those terms now that's just, it doesn't mean anything. And there's all these subdivisions of paleo now because they're all arguing with each other, and it's the human, usual human nonsense. Better term is hunter-gatherer. Before we farmed, people foraged. They went from place to place to place. That's what everyone was doing. Pre-agrarian. Okay? Iraq, Tigris, Euphrates River, in between, perhaps the oldest agrarian settlements, 6,000, 7,000, maybe 8,000 BC. Okay, what were we all doing on the planet? For those of you who believe we were on the planet as Homo sapien or some reasonable facsimile in 10,000 BC, right? Even that one's up for debate. No end to it, right? But you are sitting there with an ailment, a health concern, a disease, a symptom, and you do want to know how to eat. So debate what you want. There is some serious, serious relevance to how one should choose their food. How do I decide for me? Well, one facet of that, a facet of it, I'll get to the main point later, but one facet of that is I look for okay, we may be having technical problems. Yes, what's going on? Yes. Hang on. Say, Joel. my machine says I'm on. I think I'm on again. Yeah. Okay, we're back on. Okay, we're back on now. Sorry about that. Little technical problem. Of course, this is Southern California. We get a heat wave. Today at the gym, there was no hot water. And I'm going off the air. Little heat fries us all. All right, well, hopefully I'm on air. My point in Jared Diamond's book, The Third Chimpanzee, Agriculture's Mixed Blessings. Now, you can't argue this because they dig up the corpses and they analyze them forensically. No one's going to argue with any of this. No one. Bottom line, the minute we started farming, we started getting chronic disease. Chronic disease we didn't see as hunter-gatherer, and the line is very sharp. It's like over 500 years, even less. Now, take corn. You know, corn, good old sweet corn, corn flour, corn from South America to Central America to North America. In chapter 8, Jared Diamond reveals this tracing of the migration of corn, meaning as corn spread from South America to Central America up to North America to the Ohio and Illinois River Valley basins. Diamond notes that where corn went, everybody got sick. Tooth decay, anemia, arthritis, stuff no one had seen. With the advent of corn, things got much, much worse. And they've done this with other, what, grains. That means something. It means something big. Against which today, now we have, okay, I'll do what I said I shouldn't do. Your paleo types, with the backing of a lot of science, arguing against your carbohydrate grain-driven diets. Of course, then things get murky because, and you've got paleo people who aren't eating their fruits and vegetables. And then you've got paleo people who get all upset about the fact that some misinformed people think that you shouldn't eat fruits and vegetables. And it's one big human mess. Once human mess takes over, propaganda takes over, we get away from common sense and people who just love to argue start arguing to make names for themselves. But what I want to point out to you, overwhelmingly, abundantly, is as you construct your view of reality, go to anthropology. If you want to understand health, go to anthropology, go to archaeology, go to your ancestry. What did your ancestors eat? Trace your lineage and understand, you know, I have a lot of my clients do the 23andMe and Ancestry.com and the rest of it. And what a lot of people will find is they're 20% this and 20% that and 32% this and 15% that. And it just seems like it confuses them more. Why? Because they're a hybrid. They're a mixture. Guess what? It's because you don't know how to interpret it. You don't know how to interpret it. You may be 20% Cherokee Indian, but you may be expressing so much Indian that you're essentially all Indian. You may be 20% Viking, Norwegian, Scandinavian, but you may be all Scandinavian in your expression. So the percentages that you get, that you tally when you do these investigations into your genetics, because we can do that now. It's a lot of fun. Don't let it confuse you. If you feel like you're an Indian, if you feel like you have the soul of a Viking, and you're 15% or 10%, you are. Feed that. Feed that. That's a big deal. Now, I learned this off working with people. I'll find someone that looks Viking, acts Viking, fits all the Viking, and then he tells me, well, I'm 80% Scottish. Or I'll find someone that I could swear is Portuguese. Or derived from some of the cultures earlier than the Portuguese. Some of the truly ancient cultures. And this individual will be nothing but Irish and English. And you got to understand that our genetics and what our genetics is going to be. In other words, genetics is relatively new. And for as excited as we are, always trust your common sense. If your genetic heritage is talking to you, but in terms of percentage, that Indian in you, or that Viking, or that Welsh, or that African, or that Incan is speaking to you, but it's just a tiny percentage of you, if I were you, I would study that lineage. I would begin to eat and sleep and think and act and behave and dress and live the way they did, even though it's a small percentage. It's a navigation tool. Your heritage is a navigation tool. So, your anthropology, the archaeology, what studying animals can tell us, can all give us insights into who we are and what we ought to be doing. I would put that on any day of the week, far ahead of the bozo authorities, whether it's modern science or modern nutritional science, that build their opinions on sometimes a lot more subjective fantasy than the hard line. Here's another topper. I talked about him last week in different terms, but Anthony Bourdain. The book that made him famous, I got this years ago. I think I got this the first year it came out or two. Kitchen Confidential. Get the book. New York Times bestseller. Great book. He was a real storyteller, as I was saying last week. Kitchen Confidential. I put it on the website, picture number 5. It talks about Bourdain running a restaurant up there on the west side of Manhattan. Somewhere around Columbus Circle, I think it was. I can't remember, but it was an Upper West Side restaurant, big one. Bourdain was executive chef, as he usually was. And one of his waiters gets fired. I think he fires the waiter, or management fires the waiter, something like this. The waiter's really angry, wants to get back at the restaurant. So reports the restaurant to the authorities for being filthy and far below the standards. And, of course, on that basis, the authorities come to the restaurant. It was the Board of Health, something like that. Bourdain, being executive chef, is very concerned about this, quite upset, of course, with the stupid waiter. Waiter got fired because he was a lousy waiter. Bourdain's upset. The authorities come, and they start sampling the food. Now, check this out. They're sampling the food, and they find out that all the salad, lettuce, every bit of salad that goes out to the public, to the customers, from Bourdain's restaurant, is grossly infected with Giardia and amoeba. Now, you can't get worse parasitic infections. Amoeba, when it goes chronic, it is a bear to get rid of. It's very difficult to get rid of amoeba. And Bourdain is quite upset because he figures that the Board of Health, we'll call it, is going to close him down because everything's infected and his whole kitchen staff's infected. And just before the authorities leave, just when Bourdain figures he's going to get the notification, the authorities turn to him at the end of the inspection and go, don't worry about it. You passed. Bourdain looks at them in shock and says, what do you mean I passed? How? Now, check this out. The Board of Health says this is normal. It says there is no restaurant, as far as we know, in New York that doesn't test the same way. There's no restaurant in New York. And, of course, this is everywhere, not just New York, where the lettuce, the salads, are not grossly infected with Giardia and amoeba because the kitchen staff is, and you can't stop it, and you're never gonna. They leave. Bourdain's place is not shut down, and life goes on, and it was just another piece of education for young Anthony Bourdain at the time. Accordingly, then, is this notion that when people eat meat, especially if they undercook it, especially if they go primal, is the idea that under those circumstances, then one is not going to stay clean. You're going to get infected, and if you're vegetarian, you won't. And there's another example of what I mean. If you go in to the social history, if you go into past history, if you go into archaeology, if you go into anthropology, you start to construct a reality on much, much greater foundation. Now, this is all today's show going to lead to vegetarianism. I'm going to flip this argument on its head, because all the great healers, all the men and women on that miraculous level, all made an argument for vegetarianism. And in part two of this show, which I'll post in an hour, get to straighttalk.cc, not .com, I'll tell you why, in the end, vegetarianism takes the lead. But the interpretation on this, again, it's from the history, the archaeology, the anthropology, and as far as I'm concerned, the bedrock, therefore, of reality. I'm Dr. Vincent Medici, 714-850-1007. If you've got a health concern, if you're interested in being put on the reality track and not the propaganda track, 714-850-1007. Get to the website at an hour, straighttalk.cc, and listen to the second half of this show. We'll see you next week. Okay, part two. Part one is like a blink. Here's part two. You're looking for reality. Reality is a construct. You want to have a good sense of reality, or you make decisions, choices in life, over a period of years, okay, in this case regarding your health, that don't yield a return. We're talking about something important. We're talking about your health. Look, you're on the website. Go down to picture 22. That is Shivaburi Baba. Don't be alarmed by the beard. That dude is 112 years old. Take a good look at him. You think that's magic? That is not magic. He earned it. He had wisdom. He knew how to live in ways most of us don't understand, perhaps none of us understand. This was a real guy. And no, he didn't live 8,000, 10,000 years ago. He lived in the 1940s, 1930s, 1920s. This is a real guy. He's 112. That's it for me. Case closed. Now, let's not get religious here, okay? People love to get bent out of shape over nothing. We're all one in the end. This was a practicing Hindu from India. Whatever this guy understood, he understood it. And don't anybody get smug here. The Indians are very, very, very smart. They know how to count, too. Generally better than we do. And all I'm saying is, make no mistake about it, this guy was 112 years old. This is not a myth. He was not a meat eater. Now, there you go, Medici. Just when I thought I understood, now you gotta go throw me a curveball. Of course I do. This is Curveball City. Life's a curveball. Throwing you a curveball. In the end, you are going to go vegetarian. As cellular efficiency improves, as the meridians open, you know, prana, chi, all that stuff I talk about that unfortunately for most lives in the realm of, yeah, heard about it, not quite sure. Mildly interested in something about it. But what do you think of selenium? When these guys become energetic, stuff happens. Let me give you another great example. The Mighty Atom. As a kid, I got turned on to this guy named Joseph Greenstein. Page 18. Picture 18. The Mighty Atom. Life and Times of Joseph L. Greenstein. Biology of a Superman. I just purchased a movie. His family made a movie. I knew his granddaughter, Myrna, from Queens, Utopia Parkway, New York City. By coincidence, I had the book, and then she saw the book in my hand and said, hey, that's my grandfather. I mean, freaky coincidence. The Mighty Atom was famous among people that followed that kind of thing. He was about 5 feet tall. He did things that aren't normal. He was a strong man. He was one of the true strongmen. There's him in picture 19. I think it's legendarystrength.com. I'll get you the website some other time. I've got a movie on him. His family made a movie about him. I purchased it a week ago. Amazing documentary. Amazing documentary about this hero, the Mighty Atom. Yeah, he's biting through chains with his teeth. Now he's breaking chains. Look at him. Picture number 20. Look at him. Breaking chains. Look at that face. He was 5 feet tall. Look at those fists. Let me tell you something. Don't doubt me. This is not a trick. These were not stunts. You know, like a magic trick. This guy was a strong man. If you read his life story, you know, he was Jewish. He was born sickly in Poland, dirt, starvation, poor, getting beat up regularly. He has an incredible story. Ended up making friends with a circus performer who was in town, who was a strong man, Valenko, I think was his name, from Russia, and ended up leaving Poland. Didn't even tell his mother because she wouldn't have let him go. And Greenstein goes to India, he goes to China, Mongolia, he goes all over the world with his strongman and learns all the secrets of health, vitality, and super strength. And this is how he becomes the Mighty Atom. This is real stuff. Not a heavy meat eater. Interesting. Not out there chomping down the raw meat. Not running around with signs, I want to go paleo. Lived to about 90. Lived in Brooklyn. Fearless. As I said, he was born Jewish, died Jewish, put up with a lot of prejudice. This is a great story of him on the Upper East Side. New York City, Upper East Side, he goes. Yorkville. I used to work in Yorkville. In fact, I worked a lot on the Upper East Side in Manhattan growing up as a kid tending bar. Great education. Every young man should tend bar in Yorkville. Not friendly to Jews. Definitely not. At least back in the 40s and 50s. When I was there in the 80s, they weren't friendly either, but things were changing. But Greenstein put up with a lot of prejudice. You know, outside your business, a sign, no dogs or Jews allowed in. And of course, what does the mighty Adam do? These are real stories. Gets a ladder, goes up, pulls the sign down. While he's up on the ladder looking down, there are 20 thugs ready to break his bones. And you see, I'm not kidding you now. I know Yorkville. You'll get your bones broken. These guys will go after you with a bat and leave you dead. This guy actually goes up, takes the sign down. You know what the headline in the newspaper is the next day? The mighty Adam puts 20 men in the hospital. Oh, yeah. Don't mess with Joe Greenstein. Don't mess with him. He will break you in two. He doesn't care. He could be 6'8", 400 pounds. He'll get your finger and rip it out of its socket. These stories are true. Great inspirational story. How some kid from a ghetto in Jewish Poland, dying of what's going to be tuberculosis, his dad died young of TB, runs away with a circus performer, learns all the mysteries of the Orient, and comes back the mighty Adam. For the rest of his life, he goes around the world giving people demonstrations to his dying day. And into health he was. Health food, health everything. Mind over matter, I mean, he was an ancient day, an early day Jack LaLanne, not much, literally not much younger than Jack LaLanne, or not much older, I should say, than Jack LaLanne. These are the guys you don't hear about. Get the book. Get, his family did an incredible video on him. Why do I bring this up? Like Shiva Bhuri Baba. The mighty Adam was no big meat eater. He did eat a little meat, I think. I'm going to confirm this. But never would have gone into this stuff heavy, hardcore. I bring it up because now we're starting to get into the realm of paranormal. The distinction you have to make when you're making your dietary choices, especially when this vegetarian thing comes up, is, are we talking about diseased people? Are we talking about people who are not diseased, who want to stay healthy? Or are we talking about the paranormal? Joseph Greenstein, the mighty Adam, was paranormal. Shiva Bhuri Baba was paranormal. Paranormal, above normal. Okay? You want to live long and have good health? Try looking like Shiva did at 112 years old. You want strength and vitality? Try on the Mighty Adam's roadside act one of those days. And there's his sons, picture 21. He taught all his sons to do the same thing. Of course, he had to be the best. In the movie I've got on him, it's a 45-minute documentary. Some of his sons are still with us and talking about their dad. And then, of course, you know, he wasn't a saint. He wasn't perfect. And he always had to be one better than everybody else. Incredible documentary. I'm sending in donations. They've got some donation thing on this. Just love it. Just love it. That's what it's about, man. These are the people in the know. Relative to that, what you have out there writing books and on these big conferences debating and this and that, these are not the people in the know. One thing is they don't understand energetics. That's to say the autonomic nervous system. That's today, if you're one of the, you know, 2,500 people that listens to this show, this site, it comes to the site and listens to the shows each week. I implore you, I don't care if it's your first day and you're from New Zealand or you listen 3 hours a week to try to understand what I'm talking about. Get into this thing called chi. Prana. You got to have this experience. You got to live this way. None of this stuff is going to add up. You're not going to get what you want until you open up your flow. Now, I'm giving you an opportunity to understand what I'm talking about. It's still beyond me how you can listen to me say this week after week after week. And at the same time, I know for a fact it's kind of like just grazing your temples and going out there back into cyberspace. Don't do that anymore. Whatever you think your health is about, make the priority of it what it takes to begin to feel an inner flow of warm, water-like sensations of enormous euphoric feeling flow through different body parts. And after that, get on my shows and listen. I try to describe this every single week in a different way. Those of you coming to the school, I'm going to push you as much as possible to start having an authentic experience of chi, prana, whatever you want to call it. Because when you see miracles like Shiva Bhooripaba, you want that. It's why you're into health. You want that. When you want the strength of a Joseph Greenstein, all this is founded in electromagnetics. Now, I said at the end of part one, vegetarianism, yeah. As you become more cellularly efficient, meat is too heavy. There are nuances along the way. And those nuances are to be experienced. And no, we don't have the science to explain. That's why a lot of these debates are going to go on forever. We've given up our common sense and our intuitive force to science. In the end, we don't really, you won't bet your house on it. You won't put your bottom dollar on it. You see? Until science okays it. That is stupid. That is really the myopia of our time. It's a pathetic level of our evolution that we would put something as minute and shallow as science into that which should guide and dictate your daily health choices, as well as everything else. Take that one to the bank, my friend. Then, of course, there's Gurdjieff. Go to page 12, picture 12, George Ivanovich Gurdjieff, Gurdjieff, everyone argues. I like his hairdo, personally. At the turn of the last century, there was a guy, I put him on picture 16. Now that guy looks constipated to me, don't you think? Typical Western Russian intellectual. Ouspensky. Ouspensky had this thing. He's from St. Petersburg, which is what it was called back then. I think it's Leningrad now. St. Petersburg was built by Peter the Great. It was ordained as the most beautiful city in the world. He put the money. He built it out of swamp. I mean, it's nothing but rat, mosquito-infested swamp. And, you know, the czars back then, they had a lot of dough. Some say Putin is the richest man in the world. He's supposed to be worth like $200 billion. I don't know how they compile those figures, but these Russian leaders. At any rate, Ouspensky was one of the big shots in the intellectual world in St. Petersburg, which was about the most beautiful city in the world. And Ouspensky went around the world in search of the miraculous, thus the book, Picture 14, In Search of the Miraculous. And of course, Ouspensky, being a man of science, he was a brilliant mathematician. He made his name in math. He wrote this book, Tertium Organatum, or something like that, some famous book, math book. I have it. I never even read it, but he was a famous math dude. No one questioned his intelligence. Famous because of the books, and he was already well known. And goes around the world looking for people who really have esoteric knowledge that they've converted into power. You know, the power to lift a car, the power to beat up 20 men. The power to live forever, to live a long time, healthy. The power to make your dreams come true. Not the power to have 2 million friends on Facebook. Real power. So Ouspensky goes around the world looking for men who know things. And comes back and he says, no one knows a thing. This is all a crock. I've been everywhere. Nobody showed me anything. And who does he run smack into? In St. Petersburg, in a coffee shop. It wasn't Starbucks, I assure you. One of those Turkish coffee shops in St. Petersburg, he runs into Gurdjieff. Now, Gurdjieff is there looking for some donations so he can do his experiments. And Ouspensky in the book, In Search of the Miraculous, says, the minute I saw this guy, I knew he was the real thing. They had a long relationship. Eventually, Ouspensky went off and, of course, as it always goes, decided he knew better. Yeah. To this I say of Ouspensky, truly, Gurdjieff could have fit Ouspensky into his toe. Ouspensky was a great intellectual, and he was passionate about accumulating knowledge. He was a man of science, and ignorant and limited like most men of science, but at least he was open-minded enough, Ouspensky, to embrace something when he saw it. That's more than I can say for most scientists today. Most scientists today, when they see something they can't understand, and of course, under the dome of science, I'll put a little subset of a lower form of consciousness, the medical doctor. And I say this not to insult medical doctors who don't fit that mold, but by and large, institutionally, pretty low form of consciousness. Not that everybody else isn't. But my point to you, at least Ouspensky was that brand of scientist who could embrace things he didn't understand, and he embraced Gurdjieff. Gurdjieff had spent many years back when you could, back when it was easier to do, traveling the world in search of real knowledge. Gurdjieff had a saying, an aphorism. I've lived by it from the day. Gurdjieff probably, if I personally have been influenced by one person, it is him. In my way, believe it or not, my dialogues with this man have gone on since the day I saw his face in 1988. Whatever I do and have done in this part of medicine began with him. Here's one of his great quotes. What you call the subconscious is, in my opinion, the real human consciousness. You bet. From Beelzebub's tales to his grandson, the arousing of thought. Beelzebub is written in an Atlantean language. It's written in a pre-dynastic language. Right there, that's enough to blow off the socks of the world. And if you still believe in Santa Claus, don't read Gurdjieff. If you realize there's probably not a Santa Claus and probably not an Easter Bunny, then you might be ready for Gurdjieff. At any rate, Uspensky meets Gurdjieff, knows Gurdjieff is the real thing. Gurdjieff is the real thing. Gurdjieff goes all over the world for 20, 30 years. He had a way of kind of fitting in. See, what you have to understand is if your consciousness is there, doors open. If your consciousness is not there, doors don't open. One of the stupidest things I've done in the last 30 years is push the boundaries of people's consciousness further than they were actually designed to go. That's not respecting a natural law. If people don't get it, they don't get it. But if they do get it, doors open. Doors have always opened for me because I get it. Doors always open for Gurdjieff. That's why Uspensky didn't get any result. His brain was shut. That relationship between the two serves my point. One searches with the mind closed and receives nothing. The other searches probably less with the mind wide open. Certainly Gurdjieff was less funded than Uspensky. Gurdjieff was not a rich man, at least when he was searching. In the end, Gurdjieff is brought in to many a school of thought and learns, like Greenstein learned. Comes back and in the aftermath says it was nothing for him to run into men who were 200 years old. 200 years old, not 130. Shiva Bhuri Baba died at 137. People consider that a big deal. It actually wasn't. It was kind of like the norm if you wanted it to be. If you didn't care, you'd check out when you checked out. Vivekananda, who I'm going to talk about later, died at 42. When he was 20, he knew he'd die at 42 of some form of asthma or something. And that is the fact. Vivekananda died at 42. Vivekananda talks about as a yogic, hatha yogics, live to 150. At 100, their hair's not gray. They know how to do it. Look, does this excite you? It excites me. When I see that tumor in your brain, or I get that autoimmune disease, all I see is failure to follow a natural law. After that, it's easy. The body will heal it. That's really how it works. I want a 3D software program to compare and contrast the difference between what I'm saying and what it looks like in your brain, not your brain, in the brain of somebody that's listening to this, and it goes over their head. I want to show through software programs, through 3D, different levels of consciousness. No doubt, it happens every week. Somebody from some other planet, some other state, some other country is listening today. And they're trembling. They're going to get off this show today and they're going to go, "Hey, Mabel. There's this guy, Medici, you gotta listen to him." And no doubt, for every person like that, there are 5 or 10 that listen and go, "What? Who? What is this gibberish? I want to know what to do about my toenail fungus. I've done research. I'm researching cures for toenail fungus." Now, let me tell you, I'm a researcher. I get up, I turn the computer on, get to Google, put the title search in, cures for toenail fungus, and it comes up, and there's 42 million, and I read them all, every single one of them. So I don't know what this show has to do with health. He's talking about miracles and Gurdjieff and Uspensky and these Hindu guys with these beards. Those guys, they might not even know how to count. You know, in the Old Testament, they lived to 900. They didn't live to 900. They didn't know how to count back then. Those were ancient people. You know, I work for AT&T. I'm a software engineer. I know how to count. The Old Testament, those guys don't know how to count. I will guarantee you most people think like that. But you don't. Give yourself a pat on the back for having a set of cojones. Male and female. Embrace this stuff. You need to embrace this stuff. You need to wrap yourself around what I'm talking about here. I got better things to do than spout nursery rhymes and fairy tales. So I don't. We need to hang our hat on something to counterbalance the oncoming mess. I went to Starbucks before my run last week. I was in Starbucks. Banks, Starbucks. I get a little nauseous in these places. At any rate, I went into Starbucks, right? Stood there like a clone online. At any rate, I'm in Starbucks, and it's really quiet. And I did it. I counted 22 people in Starbucks. I'm not kidding. Every single one of them was staring at their individual cell phones. No one was talking. Every one of them. 22 people. It was a Starbucks on PCH. Wealthy crowd. Every one of them looked very corporate to me. No one was talking. Except the cashier, you know. What's your name? Because we love you. I always tell him my name is Harry. I'm not telling him my name. It's none of your business. Okay? Everybody wants to know your name because it's supposed to mean they love you. We love you. We want to be personal with you. No, you don't. That's the garbage they tell you in that marketing conference you went to last week as you were indoctrinated. Yeah, that is the unfortunate thing. Everyone's on their cell phones. We need something to counterbalance that. You want to talk to me about health? Gurdjieff, the mighty Adam, Shiva Bhuri Pabha, all these anthropological, archaeological findings. Study nature. Go study a monkey. If there's no fruit, it takes those big molars, those specially designed teeth, designed to just cut through tree bark, grinds that food up. We wouldn't eat it. It can eat it. It's got the teeth for it. Grinds it up and lives off it. But you give it a nice banana and that's the end of that. I want the soft, sweet fruit. But when it's a drought, right, I got a bunch of teeth designed to keep me survived, to keep me alive in the drought. That's very different than the way we look at our food choices. This is the stuff that health is made of. But I don't have 2 million followers on Facebook. Don't listen to me. If I had 2 million followers on Facebook, well then, even if I don't know anything, you should just flock. Hey, 2 million people can't be wrong. Yeah, tell me about it. If that many people follow him, he must know something. Yeah. Think about that. So I love this stuff. These are real stories. Bourdain really, you know what the end of that chapter is on the Bourdain thing? He says, Think about that the next time you're deep kissing a vegetarian. I love that guy. Yeah, right. All those vegetarians, because they don't eat meat, they couldn't possibly have infections in their body. They eat vegetable fare. And he has the Board of Health telling them every salad's infested with it. You ever go to a restaurant and order a salad because you want to be healthy? Parasites are everywhere, including the saliva of vegetarians. All right. Picture number 9. Life and teaching of the masters of the Far East. Baird T. Spaulding. There's a book you didn't see on the New York Times bestseller list. Didn't see it at Barnes & Noble. No, you had to have a place like the Bodhi Tree. Remember the Bodhi Tree? I think the one in San Francisco is still there. They opened up a new one now, you know, West L.A. It's just a mockery of what it used to be. What was the Bodhi Tree? If you read all the esoteric books in the world for the last 1,000 years, and then you said, I read all the esoteric books in the world in the last 1,000 years, 2,000. We got to keep that Library of Alexandria in there. No, 3,000. I've read all the esoteric books in the last 3,000 years, including every scroll in the Library of Alexandria. And now I'm going to open a bookstore and call it the Bodhi Tree. Oh, I get emotional. That was the Bodhi Tree. It was a gift. It was such a sacred gift. It was on Melrose off La Cienega. For whatever reason, it closed down. Amazon closed it down. You know, Jeff Beelzebub. At least he's got a good hairdo. Jeff Bezos. Bezos. One-stop shopping on Amazon, everything. You don't even put on a pair of shoes anymore. You got to get them from Amazon because the shoe store doesn't stock them. Oh, we'll get them for you in a week. Well, you can get them in a day from Amazon, but you don't know how they fit. Not necessary. You don't feel anything anyway. So, Bodhi Tree was hot, man. I got turned on to this in 1988, 30 years ago. Baird T. Spaulding, The Life and Teaching of the Masters of the Far East. Here's a guy that made a lot of money in mining, textiles, one of those rich guys, but esoteric. And he took his dough, and part of what he did with his money is he traveled. He wanted to know things. So he's got this 6-volume, what is it? I've got the whole volume. I've got 2 sets of the volumes. Yeah, there's a 6-volume, there's 6 books to the volume. In volume 5, I've got it right here. I cut this page out for you, page 10. It's on the website, picture 10. Take the time. Get off your cell phone. Look at this. Question and answer. I know a doctor who spent 7 or 8 years in India. When he returned to this country, he challenged the county medical society. He asked them to present their test tubes containing the most virulent typhoid and other germs. He drank an amount sufficient to kill a young army, and nothing came of it. I found out afterward that it was the conscious control of the thyroid. He apparently controlled the machinery of immunity. Answer. Baird is answering. Yes, Baird is saying, it can be carried to immunity to every disease. Question to Baird. How does voluntary control of the thyroid gland affect acidity, so essential in warding off the effects of bacteria? Baird's answer, acidity controlled to a great extent with the voluntary control of the thyroid. Acidity is controlled to a great extent with the voluntary control of the thyroid. It can be directed and stimulated to the extent that it controls acidity to an almost unlimited degree. I have heard a number of Hindus say that this is the reason they can control the bacteria. Acidity kills them. The thyroid is stimulated with certain exercises that must be given by one versed in this teaching. Their mode is to stimulate the thyroid until it presents the proper amount of fluid for the body's use. There it is. Now, you can believe this, or you can just say, poppycock. It's just a lot of Baird T. Spaulding nonsense to sell books. Number one, Baird didn't need the money. Number two, he wasn't crazy. Number three, Wim Hof, look the name up, is doing this today. And of course, Wim uses breath. And breath connects you to the subconscious. It affects the glandular system. And he taught other people to do it. And he's been studied by, wait a minute, I'm about to say it, medical doctors. Dun, da, dun, dun. Dun, da, dun, dun, dun. Studied by medical doctors? Well, then it must be true. Baird is writing about this a long time ago. There it is. He's not making it up. Gurdjieff's not making it up. Shivaburi Papa is truly 112 in that picture. Do the parathyroids have any use? Yes. The parathyroids are a very great adjunct. They control the mechanism, the metabolism of calcium. They can be stimulated until you can create a new set of teeth at any time. How are they stimulated? The important element of their stimulation is concentration on the thyroid through a spiritual influence. Can you bring that into the realm of oxidation and the control of breathing? With the breathing should be the spiritual exercises as well. That is, the exercise of the thought through the spiritual application. I mean, this doesn't mean anything to anybody. It means everything to me. Everything. Look at picture 11. What of the adrenals? The adrenals have to do with blood pressure. The thyroid gland controls all of the other glands. The thyroid is controlled by the pituitary and that by the pineal. That is why you must become as a little child. In most post-mortem exams, the pineal is atrophied. In such cases, we are divorced from the kingdom of heaven. The pineal is the prime center for controlling all of the endocrines. It is the master, the I am of the physical body. I mean, right there. When you lose faith, just read that paragraph. When you wake up one day with a headache and find out you have a brain tumor, just read that paragraph. Keep reading it. And ask yourself if it gives you goose pimples. Ask yourself if it unwinds your spine. Ask yourself if it's fair that there's no way out of this shithole we call life, with its aches and its pains and its suffering and its mediocrity and its abuses. Ask yourself if it's fair that there's no way out. And yet read this paragraph again, because I suggest to you it certainly is fair. There certainly is a way out. And we're given all the tools. We just have to look within. It's in the literature. Now, not me. I'm on my way to Kaiser. Kaiser Permanente. That's where I get the best care. They know what my thyroid's about, let me tell you. What is the purpose of that? someday we will evolve out of that. Do not some of the great masters discuss this subject of improved action of the endocrines from the standpoint of prana and breathing? Oh, my God. Are you kidding me, prana? Prana? Does prana even exist? Has it been scientifically proven at Harvard? And breath? Yes, take a deep breath in and push the air out. Swirl it all about. Take a deep breath in and count to 10. Breath, yes. Remember to breathe. Thank you. Look at that. Do not some of the great masters discuss this subject of improved action of the endocrines from the standpoint of prana and breath? Their attitude is that if you are accepting prana, you are accepting the spiritual influences. They are the same thing. You cannot have one without the other. They are not mutually exclusive. They are designed, they're basically the same thing. They come right back to the spiritual influence. That is the greatest activity and activator. Breath and chi. They claim that is what activates the thought of youth. Then the pituitary and pineal will come into action immediately. What am I trying to say to you? What is Greenstein trying to say to you? What is Gurdjieff trying to say to you? What was Reich trying to say to you? What is Shiva Bhuripaba trying to say? What was Ouspensky hoping he would understand but never did? Now look at this one. Would you not infer that Jesus had definitely taught his disciples this system of working on the endocrines? Answer. Yes, through the Christian method, which is love in action. Don't you love it? I'm Christian. If you ask me what I am, I'll tell you Christian. Because I am. I'm not Hindu. I'm not Buddhist. I'm not Taoist. I don't study Shintoism. Christian. And I have met Christian people who don't know a damn thing about any of this, but they are love through action. And guess what? When they have illness and you put them on a table and you twist them and stretch them, they expand into a ball of prana. I will die for that. I will die for that statement. I've had Christians who are ill have miracles happen. They are miracles. You just needed to light the match. They are true Christians. They are love through action. I've seen it. They don't stretch. They don't cleanse. They don't know squat. But they are love through action. And you lay some of this stuff down to a true Christian, and you're going to see a miracle. He could say readily that if you would become as a little child, you would enter the kingdom of heaven. I mean, if that doesn't make you shake, you may not be alive. Are these material scientists who are discovering the modern miracles of biochemistry inspired by the masters? Yes. The work is being given out through these people to the race for the benefit of mankind. I thank you, my audience today. This is why I study. Science needs a facelift. It needs an overhaul. Science needs to get back to who it really is. 714-850-1007. 714-850-1007. Whether you're surfing the internet, whether you've been referred by a friend, get off your behind. 714-850-1007. Don't come in with your preconceived notions. Come in as an empty slate. Present your health concern. Make the appointment and take my advice. We'll see you next week, gang.
Okay, that's a wrap. Don't forget to get to Dr. Medici's website at drmedici.com to look at the pictures and review the show as often as you wish. See you next week.